You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Melanie Vogt. Melanie, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you so much, Brainerd. It's a pleasure to be here.
Melanie, we're going to talk about your show at Callender Gallery, of course, and also some other works at New York Artists Equity Association. So to begin with, at Callender, you had some drawings that I really loved and would like to talk about them. One of them was overalls. I just like that drawing a lot. It's watercolor and from a few years ago. But it seems to relate to also the other drawing in there, which is Portrait of Norman Allen Vogt, which I assume is your father, your late father?
That's correct.
So let's talk about those two. Maybe begin with your father, Portrait of Norman Allen Vogt. I love this drawing, and my condolences. I guess your father recently passed. Is that correct?
That's right. He passed in June, and the drawing was from a couple of years ago, or maybe not quite 2 years. He was diagnosed with a form of cancer about a year and a half ago, and this piece in my mind was also called Waiting because I was sitting there drawing him when we were waiting to go to the doctor and find out the results of what the mass was in his jaw, and it was kind of an anxious time, and my father is someone that never sat still, and towards the end of his life, that's all he could do, so it was one of the first times he ever sat still long enough that I could actually draw him. And I really am glad that I had that time with him to reflect on him. And the other piece, the overalls that are hanging or kind of floating in the sky, or I think of them as kind of ruminating or hanging in the sky, was actually done a few years prior to that, and just realizing the ephemeral existence of all life and his life in particular. And funnily enough, when I asked if I could borrow a pair of his overalls, he said, "Here, you can just have this pair, nothing to do with this." And because my father was a farmer, he was a very practical man, and sometimes my art practice was confusing to him. But he was always, glad that I had a focus. My mother was really always encouraging. Those are his overalls. However, that was kind of a funny antidote of him saying, "They're yours now. Do what you'd like with them."
That all relates. So what kind of a farmer was he? I would imagine that relates to some of the works that we might be talking about. But you grew up farming,
yeah.
Right? Or
I was lucky enough to live in one place from the time I can remember until I was about 17. And then they moved in 2020 to southern Iowa. My father was a farmer his whole life. He grew up farming. He also studied to be a mechanic. And he had a tractor repair shop and farmed. He farmed corn and soybeans, which the whole practice at this point is very controversial in terms of the scope of how we exist. I have a real special place in my heart for the small farmer. Of course, it's a struggle. Manual labor is, it's literally exhausting. He worked himself, hard constantly. He would say, "I'm a mountain of a man," but he was only 5'8", and he hefted things around with all his might and made things happen. He was really a character of true grit. And he'll never be forgotten.
And what kind of a farmer was he? What was he farming?
Corn and soybeans. So all of these crops that all through the Midwest, and I find it very interesting that corn and soybeans are the predominant crop in throughout the grain belt and are transformed into all sorts of products, biodiesel, a multitude of things. And I find it really interesting also that the whole area that is considered the Midwest at one point was prairie. And 300 years ago, 400 years ago, it was all, I would say like 99% prairie. And now it's less than 1.1% prairie. So, I guess to counteract my, concern with contemporary agriculture, I've been studying like native plants, and that's where that piece Bioluminous came from. Just thinking about the richness of native plants, and now living in the Northeast, I'm not surrounded so much by prairie or anything, but it's like a ancient forest. They have as much power as an ancient forest has. Their carbon sinks and their habitat for all sorts of small creatures. Certain birds only live in tall grasses, insects and so on alike.
Let's talk about that. I want to talk about bioluminescence, but I want to ask a little bit more about the farming. Because it's so interesting to me what your father did, and that homage to him. I was recently reading a book by Larry McMurdy, which was called Walter Benjamin at the Dairy Queen, kind of an odd title, but he was reflecting on his life as a writer of basically a kind of cowboy sort of stories, novels, some of which were made into films. And he said that there was a work ethic among his father, who was, I guess, a generation earlier than your father, but that, like, the cowboy then who was trying to farm, in his case, his father was, farming cows, and he said it was really was the wrong kind of cow, and the ethic was that you just work, you just continue to work. And he said his father worked kind of endlessly and just expected that, this kind of work, this sort of ethic, which he thought was kind of a Victorian ethic almost, of just working will get you some glory. In fact, didn't get his father the glory that he wanted. It was he was always struggling. He was always working amazingly hard. And I don't know if you relate to that at all, but that's partly why I'm asking, because I imagine that relates something to how you're working.
I can't wait to learn more about that book. It sounds incredible. Yeah. Well, absolutely. And especially as we were children, the 80s farm crisis hit hard. I can't even articulate everything that happened because I was, that's something I want to research more. But basically, a lot of farmers took out very high interest rate mortgages to buy their dream farm. And then the market collapsed and they were all either bankrupt or saddled with huge amount of debt. And my dad was too proud to claim bankruptcy. And so growing up, it was just like a constant struggle. And I'm glad to say finally he was able to, make his way. But, as a child, I didn't really even think that we didn't have enough or anything like that, because, we had our home and we had a garden and we had all of the things that, everybody else had in our small town in Iowa. So I never really felt it, but I know he was really burdened by all that. And he always worked hard. It was really part of his ethos. And I can't wait to read this book, because he, even though he grew up in Iowa and there are no real, it's not cowboy culture, but even from a small child, he was kind of mesmerized by the myth of the cowboy and pull up your bootstraps and get to work. That was just innately part of him. And I'm glad to have served witness to that. I guess it gets me moving as well, even though I'm making art.
Well, there was also some injustice there, right? I mean, that is unjust what happened with the loans and the crash and all of that, right? That was
Oh,
I
certainly.
remember about that, and there were some farmers that were furious that, you know,
Oh, they
shot the
were
loan
terribly.
officer or whatever because of.
Absolutely. I heard personal stories of this. This was not my father, but a neighbor that I got to know, where they live or where they lived. He said he took his loaded up his cattle and took them into the bank because I would have loved to have seen that, because basically they were repossessing all of his belongings, and he got in a lot of trouble for that, and he basically fled and moved away to the sand hills of Nebraska. But the loan officer that my father got the loan from had the audacity to say, "Norman, what do you think you did wrong?" And my mother had to hold him down, under, put her hand on his knee so he didn't get up and like punch the guy. And he actually, that man committed suicide, the loan officer, because he had given so many high interest rate loans to all of these people that were then struggling. So it was a mess. I didn't
Wow,
think about talking about
yeah.
this today, but this was all real. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's so important because that's part of, you know, right, who you are, whether it was talked about at the family table or not, that's part of what happened. And so bioluminescence, to talk about the very large painting, we're talking about drawings at Kellner, but now this large painting, bioluminescence, yeah, we have a woman standing in a field, right? And there's a kind of numinous quality to it. It looks like she's either in moonlight or there's a glow in front of her, and there's also some mysterious things happening. It looks like a body, a dead body in the woods, and perhaps an infant. There's an infant in there as well. So this feels like it has a story to tell. I don't know if it relates to what we were just talking about, but there's quite a narrative in here, right?
And thanks for taking the time to really look into the tall grasses and milkweeds and so on. I guess I'm thinking of it as a hopeful new chapter,
Yeah.
but yet the past is always there. And I feel like there I've gotten to know people that are, and even certainly my father was very concerned and about best practices and taking care of the land and terracing and doing the best he could. But I've met some incredible people in the Lost Hills, and I met Kelly Madigan, who's a writer, and we met at a residency in Wyoming in 2009. And since then, we've connected over many subject matters that have overlapped, overlapping subject matters. And she's been so gracious as to host me many times. When I first met her, she was living in Lincoln, Nebraska, and now she lives full time in Iowa's Lost Hills. And the Lost Hills is a region that contains some of the only remnant prairie in the state. And remnant prairie meaning it's never been touched because the soil is too fragile. Loess is on a molecular level, kind of like little tiny cubes, and it shears off. So farmers couldn't actually drive on it. So that is why some of the loess still remains. And there are all of these really magical plants. And so I've gotten to learn a lot from her and her partner, who is a wildlife biologist, and they're both very passionate about opportunities to basically take care of the custodians of the prairie that surrounds where they live. And I go there and I paint, and I learn stuff all the time, and they take me out on controlled burns. That helps basically open the seeds and allows them to grow. Prairie restoration interventions, and it's fascinating. And I always would love the idea of returning to my dad's farm too, to just see the juxtaposition of those two worlds, of like kind of the reality of what I grew up with and how one has to exist and use the land, and then also like opportunities to conserve the land. And even my dad, he was hit by a tornado in 2015, and part of his land was put into something like a prairie reserve, which is a conservation plot called CRP. So it's basically the farmer plants part of the land back into native plants, and they have to manage it and make sure that it's not overgrown by cedar trees that aren't supposed to be there and thistles that are problematic and things like that.
That's so interesting. So part of this this portrait, this bioluminous painting is about all that you're learning out there, right? I mean, there's another one called Burr Oak with Blonde and Yarrow, and this is also a beautiful one. Does this also relate to that prairie? Is this part of what's out there? Because I imagine you're learning tons of names of all this flora, right?
Absolutely. That piece, Burr Oak with Blonde and Yarrow, is a cedar tree, and it's a burr oak tree. So there are oak trees that are, you know, native hardwood trees that aren't that big, but they are really hardy and they're kind of gnarly. There's a crest of burr oaks on top of, there's a row of burr oak trees on top of a crest on one of the hills behind my friend's home. And one summer I was going up there. When I paint outside, I have to return to the spot over and over again, and it takes me at least a week to get the information that I need. And at that time, I was followed by two retired milking goats that were called Blondie and Yarrow. And so I paid tribute to them by listing them there. But actually, the title is just to question, like, who has passed through there? And if you look really closely in the painting, and I don't know if you'll be able to see online, there are some Victorian ancestors that I painted in there, and then I removed them. And they're not my ancestors. They're like Victorian ancestors in air quotes, because I also find it interesting when there are photographs that have been left behind at antique shops and things, and I collect them. So I painted these two kind of like ghosty little women in there that were kind of green, and I kept covering them over. So they're in there, but I painted them out, except for a hand and a couple eyes. So because I felt like I just wanted the focus to be on the tree, and then it became about the people. So I guess that's also something that I want to focus on in going forward, is more focus on the plants and try to decentralize the human presence a little bit. And because I feel like the plants are the most hopeful things. And there's so much being discovered about plants by scientists and the book that Zoe Schlanger's book, Consulting the Light Eaters, talks a lot about that. And you mentioned something about the light in the painting. I wanted the plants to almost seem like they were glowing. However, I haven't seen a lot of bioluminous plants. And so that's maybe something to research and think about.
Yeah, I love the term. I mean, speaking of kind of elements of figures coming in and out, there's two other paintings within Cottage and Cottage Window that both have parts of bodies, right? Within Cottage has parts of two legs hanging from what looks like a doorway or a chimney, and Cottage Window has what looks like a disembodied hand. So in these, and maybe there's more in here that I'm not seeing, but in these, the human element seems to have almost an otherworldly aspect, right? These are ways we've seen figures, especially the legs and within Cottage, that seem to have another meaning for you.
Well, I guess they're kind of haunting the landscape, if you will. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of beautiful parts of humanity, but there's a lot of tragedy, a lot of kind of struggle between what people think, you know, they're separate from the natural world, or their impact on the natural world has been questionably unsavory. Or those two paintings that you just mentioned, though, it's interesting that you picked those two out. Those were created within two stone structures in Ireland. So in 2022, I believe, maybe 23, it was 2023, I got to go to Ireland, to Kilrillig, to an artist in residency on the edge of a cliff, basically in Kerry County, or County Kerry, Ireland. And it was very remote. My partner and I, or my husband and I, actually were there together, and we were 3 miles away from any town, so we had to walk to the village to get food and so on. So I was painting in the pre-famine cottages, and he was painting inside. And anyway, these were things that I thought of when I was there painting the cottages from, you know, just being there and thinking about the people that had lived there and what their lives might have been like and the tragedies that could have happened and what led to the fact that well, I was painting in the ruins, and we were living in adjacent cottages that had been renovated. So I was just, you know, thinking about the potato famine and how, you know, how did these beautiful stone structures turn into ruin and be overgrown by plants? So these are things that come through my mind as I'm painting.
I love
what
that.
What we find. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right. What we leave behind, too, that's, well, which is a little bit of ghosts of the past, right? I mean, that's how they seem mm-hmm. to me a bit. Yeah.
I love to entertain all sorts of things when I'm painting. Once I read about something called the stone, I think it's called the stone tape theory or something like that. Like stones and things can actually hold psychic memory of a place. I don't necessarily believe that, but I kind of love to entertain that. And when I was painting out there, some type of flock of birds came so close over my head and swooped over me that it sent chills down my spine, because I couldn't see them, and I never really saw where they were, but it really felt like, and I could imagine how people, like early humans there living in these cottages, could feel like the landscape was haunted. And the mythology of Ireland is very fascinating to me, with all the thoughts of fairies and I've forgotten the name for witches and all of the mythology of Ireland is quite fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel the same. Melanie, it's great talking to you about all of this. I for listeners, of course, there's links here to see even more of the images that that we talked about. But I want to ask you one last question, a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
I'm rereading Consulting the Light Eaters right now and listening to it. I'm listening to it again as I paint. So it's a great read. I would recommend it. It's very hopeful.
Melanie, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. And again, listeners have links here to find more about your work and these shows. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.